That you've been able to join us this morning as we're live here in Mount Vernon, Texas, and joined this morning with Chip Horton.
Hey, y'all.
And I'm Ryan Smithy. And this morning we have the great joy and honor of being in one of those great chapter twos, the Daniel chapter two. If you want to be turning your attention there, we'll be there in just a moment. Some of these great kingdom chapters as you look through and course find so many prophecies pointing forward to the kingdom, and the ones that stand out maybe Isaiah 2 and Joel 2 and Daniel 2 that give us so much information about locating the kingdom that is to come. So when Acts 2 rolls around, we find this is that which the prophet spoke of. Shouldn't be surprised that we're seeing what we see come to pass, because it's exactly what had been said would happen. And so we're excited about getting to study through that this morning in this great book of Faithful Man of God. And as we do so, I do want to point out a few things that are going on or quickly approaching. I remind you there are two gospel meetings going on in this Northeast Texas area this week. You can get down to Marshall, Texas, and you can listen to Joe Ruiz, and he's with the Marshall Church of Christ there, and what causes the church to grow. And so that actually is going through Thursday night on the 19th. You have opportunities there at 7 p.m. tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday. You only have tonight and tomorrow night to get out to Mount Pleasant with the North Jefferson Church of Christ. Kevin Cawley is doing a great job. I've heard wonderful things about the gospel meeting out there this week, and he's looking at the topic, Jesus or me, what will it be? And I think certainly in the time in which we live, in which society says it's all about me, what an important topic. And so you've got tonight, Mount St. Helens all over again. Tomorrow night, Empire of Desire. And so encourage you to get out to the North Jefferson congregation if you are able. Along the lines of a gospel meeting, also this one next week, if you can get out to Maybank, old Billy Bland from the Memphis School of Preaching is going to be out at Maybank. That'll be October 22nd through the 25th. And, of course, I'm sure he got tired of the jokes very quickly. Certainly the most bland instructor there at Memphis, but yeah. He always did a great job, and so look forward to that opportunity as well. Locally, Chip, we've got an invitation for everybody this Saturday.
Yeah, man, y'all come out and eat breakfast with us this Saturday morning at 8 o'clock and listen to one of our great young men, Kason Myers. He delivers a great devotional thought to us and trying to encourage us. Also have our good friend from Costa Rica coming in, and he'll have a few minutes to address us about the great school that is being erected there in Costa Rica to preach the gospel. So a lot of good opportunities. I already heard from about a dozen people that are coming, so hope that those calls keep coming in today. It'll be good.
Now, we are segregated, though. I said an invitation to everybody. We've got a men's breakfast this
This ain't the Cub Saturday, Scouts. So, this ain't the Cub Scouts. Girls, you can't come.
And we are specifically looking forward to that that time together. And so, again, that's at 8 right here at the Mount Vernon congregation on Saturday. If you're in the area, we'd love for you to join us.
Right.
Also, coming up here in just a few quick weeks, November 4th and 5th is the Gospel Radio lectures, fourth annual, 4 years we've been doing this. And so we're kicking off that Saturday at 10 a.m. and hope that you can join us as we look at the idea the gospel is for all. Again, we segregate a lot of different things in our society. But truly, the gospel is a message for all people in all situations and all times of their life. And so I think we've got a great lineup of speakers and topics, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity as well. Do want to remind you, if you want to listen in tonight with the North Jefferson congregation, you can jump on over to gospelradionetwork.org and listen in, but also certainly for the lectures. You'll be able to listen in live online as well if you can't make it to be with us. But we'd love for you to join us. And always, of course, the lessons are great, but also look forward to that banquet, if you will, each year, the Friends, Supporters, Broadcasters Banquet, as we get to enjoy a good barbecue lunch together. And also kind of give some updates about what's going on with the network. And so I hope you'll mark those things on your calendar and look forward to being a part of those. Well, with that, let's turn our attention then to Daniel chapter 2. And we got to look with Richard yesterday at Daniel 1 and that idea that here is Daniel, a young man, being carried away. In some senses, maybe in the prime of his life, a very young age, many have guessed maybe in the 14 to 16-year-old range, carried away from his home, everything that he knew, and yet he still had that commitment because he purposed, he determined in his heart, chapter 1 and verse 8, that he was going to be faithful unto God. And because of that, God is going to use him in great ways. And I think we've mentioned before that this is a prime example of God's efficiency in the sense that he had his people in the place that they needed to be at the time that they needed to be. And we've studied through Jeremiah. Jeremiah is with the people of the land. He's prophesying before, during, and after the captivity and the in the land of Judah, or with the those that are left behind. Sometimes they're in Egypt, but primarily among the people there in Jerusalem. You've got Ezekiel, whom we just looked at and studied, and he's with the captives. He's with the people that are going through that period of time of captivity in the land. And so he's there for their comfort, their strength, their edification, and also that call to faithfulness. He's still there in exile and fighting those false prophets. There's still those that are saying, oh, don't worry about it. You're just here for a little bit. We're going home. Just be patient. And Ezekiel says, get comfortable. We're going to have these 70 years of captivity that God prophesied. And so get comfortable. Yes, we're going home sometime, but not tomorrow. And so Ezekiel there among the people, and here's Daniel. Here's Daniel among the kings. And so while the nation of Judah is going to be carried away into Babylon, God is going to be known through his people. And that's really what we begin to see unfold in the life of Daniel, is that he's going to be able to have an impact among the upper class, even, of Babylon and these ruling leaders, that they're going to be able to see the power of God. They've already seen it in Daniel chapter 1 as these faithful children of God have been proven to be most excellent in the sight of the king. And we see it even now as Daniel is among those of the wise men of Babylon. He's recognized for his work, his talent, and ultimately, of course, we know that it's that which comes from God. And so simply, let's look here in just verse 1 to begin with. We look at the setting.
In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep brake from him.
Okay, and so one of the things I like about Daniel, and Daniel's noted really as the time in which biblical events can be reconciled with secular history. Daniel was such a good historian, if you will, because of his dating, that this is really when dates are kind of set by. Well, you can come to Daniel and we can say with certainty now we know these events kind of line up in this time frame, and everything forward lines up, and we can even go kind of backwards from Daniel and figure out some times because of the good dating that exists both in the secular history and in the history that Daniel recording for us. And so it's this second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, that he's dreaming these dreams and is being troubled by them. This is likely after the period of Daniel's training. He's taken into captivity before Nebuchadnezzar is fully reigning as king by himself. And so this is likely Nebuchadnezzar's second year of reign by himself. He's not a co-regent. He's not, an underling. He is fully the king. And so this is probably shortly after the events of chapter 1. I think that's supported as well by the very fact that Daniel's considered as part of the wise men. Now, we'll see that in a moment. He's not called with the wise men initially, but when the call goes out for the death of the wise men, they come seeking after Daniel. And so he has at least had enough time here to make a name and a reputation for himself. And so having seen verse 1, let's go ahead through verse 13, and we're going to see here the king's dilemma.
Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. And the king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, O king, live forever. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. If you will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, you shall be cut into pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, you shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. They answered and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation of it. The king answered and said, I know of a certainty that you would gain the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you. For ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. The Chaldeans answered before the king and said, there is not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter. Therefore there is no king, lord, nor ruler, that asks such a thing at any magician or astrologer or Chaldean. And it is a rare thing that the king requireth, and there is none other that can show it before the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. For this cause the king was angry and very furious, and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Then Daniel answered with, oh, I'm sorry,
I stopped.
That's good stuff.
Stop there for a few minutes anyway, and largely that's just building up to the account that is to follow. But we have before us this dream that Nebuchadnezzar has had, and probably all of us have experienced the situation in which we awaken. We know that we've dreamed something. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have some vague memory or detail. It was about something, and it can trouble you. Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember the details, but I can't quite make it out, and that seems to be what's occurring here. He remembers enough to know this was some great dream, and it was a troubling dream, but I don't know what it was, and I don't know what it was about. And he really puts his magicians on the spot here, because he's calling before them all of these wise men that have counseled him and have supposed to have been interpreter of dreams and have supposed to be able to tell the future and put themselves forth as these wise men. And so he calls them and he says, I need you to tell me the dream and what it meant. Now, they're probably pretty good at making up things. If you tell me the dream, I will make up something that will sound good, and it will appease the king, and we'll go on. But now to make it up and to tell you what it means, we don't even know where to begin. And so these tables are turned. If they could do what they claim to do, this shouldn't be a great impossibility for them. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to plead with the king, but he's demanding an answer of them. Give me this answer. Tell me the dream and its interpretation, or you're going to be put to death. In many ways, Daniel is going to come not just to the rescue of the king, but to the rescue of these wise men, and really why Nebuchadnezzar didn't go ahead and exile or banish or even kill these so-called wise men that couldn't accomplish this, I don't know. Why he didn't go ahead and see through them. But anyway, Daniel, in that sense, comes to their rescue. That's not his point, of course, but probably the wisest thing that they ever said in all of their life is uttered in verse 11. Now, they don't understand the full extent of it, but this is a rare thing. What king asked this of his advisor? What king asked this of his wise men? Because no one can know this. Mm-hmm. No one can know what is in the king's mind and show it to him except the gods. Of course, in their minds, they're thinking of their idols and other things. Mm-hmm. The truth is, there is one true and living God, and he's the only one that can know this. And that they were with great wisdom. And his dwelling is not with flesh, just simply the idea, again, we're not the gods. Mm-hmm. We can't tell you this thing. And so because of this, the king is going to be of great anger, and this decree goes forth. Again, Daniel and his friends of chapter 1 are going to be sought as well. They're part of the wise men, not that were called before the king, but at least considered enough of these wise men that they're now going to be sought to be put to death. And so we're left with that dilemma. Anything in that particular section?
To show them, it kind of reminded me back in the Exodus account, you know, when finally the magicians were showed up, mm-hmm. you know, and they had to say, look, this is the finger of God. You know, we can't mimic this one.
Right.
So there's always this recognition at some point in time, as, you know, obviously we're going to continue to see, that all the glory has to go back to God of heaven.
Mm-hmm. I will butcher it, but there's some saying somewhere, you can fool some of the people some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they have done. But this, when their quote-unquote power is fully put to the test, mm-hmm. They are shown lacking, and they're shown for what they are. Well, really what we're trying to get to is the dream. So let's go on into verse 14 on through verse 35. The bulk of this chapter is going to be Daniel coming before the king and being able to reveal both the dream and its interpretation. And let's go ahead and we'll probably stop somewhere in the middle there, but begin in verse 14 as we read the account with Daniel in it.
Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which was gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. He answered and said unto Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time, and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, that they would desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon.
Let's go ahead and maybe pause even there. Just the wisdom here that's shown, and I like particularly verse 14 there, this idea that Daniel is going to answer with counsel and wisdom. He's showing great, still as a young man here. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to guess he's a man maybe around the age of 20, if even that at this point in his life, and showing this wisdom. Why are you coming at whatever time this is? I'll use the example. Why are you coming in the middle of the night and dragging us out to be put to death?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this such a haste? And so Daniel is made to be known concerning the problem that has arisen. He asks for a little bit of time. And that he would reveal these things. And especially here, note the wisdom of verse 17 and 18, that he's going to go back, even to his companions, his friends, he's going to go back to these men of God that have stood with him in the past. And again, there's wisdom in that, seeking out godly men and seeking out their wisdom, seeking out their prayers. And that's exactly what he does. He asks them to desire of God mercies, that he would reveal this thing and that they should not perish with the rest of the wise men of mm-hmm. Babylon. And so, again, one of the things that stands out to me there is that wisdom of when we're put forth with the problems of this life and the difficulties of this life, too often we're ready to jump in haste and try to deal with them ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel took the time there, take the problem before God and ask of him help.
Right. Let's all pray.
Mm-hmm. great wisdom. And so let's see how this transpires before the king, verse 19.
Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding, He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter."
All right, let's go ahead and make a comment here. The idea, number one, that this was not immediately revealed unto Daniel. Maybe that following night would seem to be kind of the time frame here. And this also is going to be revealed unto Daniel in a dream. This way in which to reveal, which to show unto Daniel, the same dream that's been shown unto Nebuchadnezzar, with the difference that Daniel's also going to be able to understand what it means, to be able to see the end of that. And so this is revealed unto Daniel. But notice immediately what he does. Daniel blessed the God of heaven. And we actually even have here the prayer of Daniel, that he turns around and he is going to give praise and adoration and thanksgiving unto God. He blesses the name of God. He's reminded, this wisdom didn't come of myself. Wisdom and might are God's. He is the one that's able to change the seasons. He's the one that's going to be able to set up and to remove kings. And that's certainly fitting in what he's about to tell Nebuchadnezzar, but certainly recognizes his power. He's the one that gives wisdom. He's the one that gives knowledge. He's the one that reveals the secret things and knoweth what is in the darkness, that light dwells with him. And so I thank thee, I praise thee, who has revealed these things unto us. In my mind, there goes to Colossians 4 and verse 2, that we are to continue in prayer and watch in the same with thanksgiving. I am amazed again at Daniel's wisdom and insight and his faithfulness here. The first thing he's going to do is take his petitions before God, and the first thing he's going to do when those petitions are answered is to turn and give thanksgiving and praise back unto God. And so, again, a great example for us to follow.
Too many don't say thank you. You know, we pray, please heal so-and-so, or please give us safe travel. And I'm certainly guilty. I know that when we leave here sometimes, we pray for safe travel, but when we get to the other end, I don't know that I've ever stopped.
Right.
I had to think about that for a minute. I don't know that I've ever stopped at the other location and said, let's pray now. Thank you for safe travel. Kind of an interesting thought, I guess, but here's, you know, please give me this. He was given that, and the first thing he did was say thank you. You know, Jesus was, where's the nine?
Right.
So many people don't come back and say thank you, and certainly, as I think, I'm guilty of that now, too.
Right. And, so, as I said, Daniel's a great, great example from youth on up to old age of, of being faithful servant of God, and so great lessons we can learn from his life. Let's continue on then in verse 24.
Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, "Destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation." Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste, and said thus unto him, "I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation." The king answered and said unto Daniel, "Whose name was Belteshazzar? Art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen, and the interpretation thereof?" Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, "The secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers, show unto the king? But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets and maketh known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon the bed are these."
I'm going to stop you again. So much for stopping you once in the middle. But I think there's an interesting contrast here in the life of Daniel and Arioch. And Arioch's going about his service. But Daniel, it's interesting. Here he is in captivity. And yet he's recognizing the power of God to raise and to destroy kings, even while his own nation is here in this captivity. God is still in control. Mm-hmm. That's the trust that he has. Mm-hmm. And also the idea in his petition to God and his thanksgiving to God, and now in his even speech here before the king, there is no personal glory that he is seeking here. He admits readily and quickly, I can't do this thing. It's not of Daniel, but this is of God. Now contrast that here with Arioch. Now he's going to go in before the king. Daniel goes before Arioch. Don't destroy the wise men. Bring me before the king. I'll show him. In verse 25, Arioch goes in, and maybe I read too much into this, but the idea, I have found. I found this man and brought him before you. I have done this great thing. It seems to me that he's positioning himself. He's politicking, as he will. Yeah. Look at the good that I have done. And Daniel's going to do exactly the opposite. I don't want any personal praise of this. This is God that's doing this this thing. And so he's asked, are you able to do this? Verse 27, verse 28, I cannot do this. No one can, not the wise men, not the astrologers, not the magicians, soothsayers. None of these people can show these things. But God, the God of heaven, he can make known. And so readily admits that which I'm about to tell you did not come of me, did not come of Daniel. This came of God. He's the one that you should be thankful for. And so, again, I see that great contrast between these characters. Daniel, in his humility, is seeking to praise God, and certainly another great example for us.
You know, I see that flowing downhill with these guys because you remember what would be the problem with Nebuchadnezzar that would be pointed out by the God of heaven, that he had a pride issue.
Mm-hmm.
Look what I've done. Look what I've accomplished. Look at me, me, me. And, you know, the Chaldeans, the soothsayers, all these individuals, all about, look what I can do. Me, me, me. Notice what we have done for you, O king. These type of things. And so Arioch seems like he's at least caught up in that as well. You know, look at me. Look what I have done. And so I might just make the comment this morning that that can be contagious.
Mm-hmm.
So watch who you hang out with. You know, if you hang out with a group of people that are always looking at me, 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 and selfie, 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 you know, maybe that's not the best folks to be hanging around, because there is attention that needs to go somewhere else.
That's right. That's right. Well, I'll try to leave you alone this time. Let's go on through 31 through 35.
31. Where were we?
Right.
31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together, and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors. And the wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth.
Okay, and so there we finally get around to the idea, this is what you dreamed. And I don't know, but likely Nebuchadnezzar is sitting there and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm remembering that now. That's what happened. Now, I can't tell you what it means, but that's what I saw. And indeed, this would be a magnificent dream to have and to behold and to wonder, what does that mean? And some are even going to wonder, as you get over here in a minute, whether this is going to be the great image that he's going to try to build in chapter 3 that he tells everybody to bow down before. Don't know that, but this great image composed of these different metals, And two thoughts are coming to mind, one with that last section, but the idea here that Daniel's being exalted in the eyes of the king, but ultimately Daniel's doing everything he can to exalt God, and that should be our point. Matthew 5, verse 16, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good work, but glorify your Father that is in heaven. Bring glory unto God, and that's what Daniel is doing. He is revealing this dream. And I want you to keep in mind something that will come up even in the next section, but it's interesting to me as you look at this this statue that is dreamed of, with the head of fine gold, the breast and arm of silver, the belly and thighs of brass, the legs of iron, the feet part of iron, part of clay. As you progress down from head to toe, the metals are growing less expensive, and they're also growing harder. In other words, gold is going to be the most expensive, but also the most malleable. And that's going to be true of these kings as well. Nebuchadnezzar ruled over a great empire. You're that great head, as we're going to see in just a moment. And he's one who at least was willing to ascribe to God power and honor and glory as he sees these things that are going to happen and to occur around him. And yet, as you progress through these kings, more and more you're going to have resistance to being molded and shaped by God. They're not going to want to hear about him until you get down into that Roman Empire, as we'll see in a moment, that ultimately is going to come to destruction by the power of God. And so maybe keep those things in mind as we read into this next section and see the meaning of that dream. But now, this is what you dreamed. Verse 36 and following is going to remind us this is what it meant. Any comments before we read on?
No, I'm looking forward to the rest of the dream.
All right, let's go verse 36 through 45.
This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. Thou, O king, art a king of kings, for the God of heaven hath given thee a kingdom, power, and strength, and glory. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field and the fowls of the heaven hath he given under thine hand, and hath made thee ruler over them all. Thou art this head of gold. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee, and another third kingdom of brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things. And as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with the miry clay. And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom, which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter. And the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure.
Okay, here he's able to say this: not only I've told you the dream, this is what it means, and it is a historical dream. I don't know if I can use that word really, because we think of historical as something that is past. This is historical future. But what verse 45 reminds us is this is as good as have come to pass. I think there of Joshua, when God tells Joshua, go and take Jericho, for I have given it into your hand. God can speak of Joshua as having already conquered over Jericho, because if Joshua would go and do his will, they were going to be successful. God is able to speak of these events that have not yet come to pass with great certainty as those things that will come to pass. And so these are the things that are going to happen. And certainly here begins with this idea in verse 36 through verse 38 that this is what it all means. You are a great king, and you have done great things. You've conquered over this world and all of the kingdoms, all of the beasts of this world have really come into your hand, and you've been made ruler over them. And you, king, specifically to Nebuchadnezzar, but I think even greater here, the idea of the Babylonian Empire. You are that head of gold. And my mind goes to chapter 4, as you mentioned earlier, because that's where Nebuchadnezzar's at. He looks around and he says, look at this great kingdom that I have made and all of these wonderful things. Yet God is going to humble him. He says, wait a minute, I give you these things. God has set him up as this head of gold. And so he is this king that sits at the top. He is, in many ways, as we've mentioned before, it's a very valuable empire. It's also a malleable empire. He is going to humble himself under the hand of God. To what degree, we might question and debate, but he's at least willing to acknowledge and to even send forth proclamations concerning the God of heaven. Mm-hmm. And so shows that malleability as that head of gold and that great kingdom that he has gained.
I'll tell you, this is, we've seen the pictures, mm-hmm. that men have drawn of this thing, and it would trouble me too. And the one thing I thought about, I'm not a welder, mm-hmm. but I know you've got to have certain rods and you've got to heat the metal, and I can't see how any of these would even come together like they were. And so I sometimes think, too far of that. But, here I see this wonderful golden head, this fantastic place that he was, and he just let it go to waste. Mm-hmm. Pride, would bring him down. And then as you look all the way to the bottom, as we'll certainly get into, I know, but as you look all the way down to the bottom, pride was an issue again, and certainly things that came from the inside of the kingdom as well. But pride is a continual problem. Mm-hmm. Like you said, this is an incredibly rich nation, and they're going to be just brought down.
Speaking there of pride, of course, we have chapter 4 where Nebuchadnezzar is going to be lifted up in pride and then brought low. But how little was learned. And I forget some of my relations, but you get over into chapter 5, and you're going to have the end of the Babylonian Empire. And I believe it's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, that Belshazzar, mm-hmm. that's going to be ruling there. And he's going to be lifted up with that same pride. We're drinking out of the goblets that have been brought forth out of the temple of God in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and exalting himself. And in that night, the kingdom's going to fall,
yeah.
because of pride. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar is shown here. For as great as a kingdom as you have set up and have gained, nevertheless, it's going to fall. I've set it up, and I will bring it down. And so verse 39, they're reminded there are two other great kingdoms that are going to come. There's going to arise another kingdom inferior to thee. Again, as you move down this image, you're going from that head of fine gold to the breast and arms of silver now. And this is going to be represented by that Medo-Persian Empire that would conquer the Babylonians. They're going to come and take power in 539 B.C. They're inferior, but stronger at the same time. They're not as malleable. They're of that silver, a little harder metal. They're a stronger empire. They conquer, but also stronger in the sense that they're not as malleable. They're not as bending, if you will, to the will of God. And so that second kingdom is going to arise. And you know what? It may be strong, but there's one coming after it that's stronger as well. And so that kingdom is going to fall. And that third kingdom is going to be set up, this Macedonian Empire, the Grecian Empire, that's going to spread under Alexander the Great, taking power in 336 B.C., conquering most of the known world. Mm-hmm. Again, you move down, it's a little stronger kingdom, less malleable, and also, again, inferior. You're passing down now from that silver to that brass. Even today, we have that bronze, brass. I'm kind of relating. I don't know how close those medals actually are, but we have that in the Olympics, gold, mm-hmm. silver, bronze. And so these kingdoms will pass. And again, that reminder, it is God that sets up. It is God that tears down. He is the one that's going to establish these kingdoms. And I think Nebuchadnezzar is being reminded, it doesn't matter how great your kingdom is, it can rise and it can fall. And, side note, that's a lesson we still need to learn today. Yeah. It doesn't matter how strong your empire is, how great you think it is, a nation that exalts itself against God is going to fall. And just because we, in some ways, do live in a great kingdom doesn't mean it's going to last forever. Mm-hmm. And none of these kingdoms would. That we see this rising and this falling. Anything in that particular section?
Therefore, let he that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall.
Very true, very true.
Hey, you know, it's still true today. Same lesson.
You come on down then into about verse 40 there, and you have this fourth empire. And again, we can line this up with history. You look through and you see these empires coming and going and marching one after another. Well, this fourth kingdom is going to come in, and it's going to be strong like iron. Again, strength of the kingdom, less malleable to the will of God, and inferior as well. So this fourth kingdom is going to come, and it's going to be strong like iron. It's going to be able to subdue other kingdoms. And here, about 27 BC, this Roman Empire is going to spread. But it's interesting. This kingdom's not going to be as strong. In fact, it's going to show its cracks. It's going to show its weaknesses. The Roman kingdom would spread, but it speaks here even of being of those feet of mixed with iron and clay. You know, you start off as a strong kingdom, but you're getting down here into the feet, and there's this inconsistency, if you will, this iron and clay that don't mix. And when you look at the Roman Empire, there were going to be a lot of power struggles, and there were going to be a lot of challenges to the kingdom that ultimately were going to contribute to its weakness. That Roman Empire was composed of so many different people and different cultures. There wasn't a great cohesion. There wasn't a great loyalty to that kingdom. And so it led to a lot of problems, a lot of unrest, and I think we see that here in the prophecies that Daniel is looking forward to. There's that fourth kingdom, but it's going to have its cracks and ultimately is going to be destroyed. Verse 44, it's in the days of these kings. Again, we can look at those great empires that are going to march down, and it's in that fourth kingdom, in this Roman Empire, that the God of heaven is going to set up a kingdom. So we've had these four kingdoms, these kingdoms that will rise and fall, but God now is going to set up a kingdom. And it's unique, it's different, because, verse 44, it will never be destroyed. Mm. Part of why? It will never be left to other people. Part of Babylon, this great head of gold, why did it fall? I believe part of it is because Nebuchadnezzar was a great leader and a king, but not his son and his grandson. And so because Nebuchadnezzar ultimately was going to die and pass from rule, and have to leave his kingdom to other people that may or may not be as strong. Well, what about Alexander the Great? He's got this great empire, this great kingdom, but when he dies, there's no real successor there. His kingdom's divided. His kingdom's fought over. You go through all of these turmoils and difficulties. The Roman Empire was a constant power struggle. Who's really in charge? Who's going to lead that empire? Well, all of that because it's going to be left to other people. We've got a kingdom now that God is going to establish, and it has but one head mm-hmm. and one ruler, Jesus the Christ, and it will be that way forever. And so as you continue looking there, never be destroyed, shall not be left to other people, and it is going to break in pieces and consume all of these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. There's the eternality of the kingdom. Eternality, both in the sense of the timelessness in this world, the church will always be there, the kingdom will always be there, but also those who are members of that kingdom are going to live with God for all of eternity. And so great keys there, if you will, that Daniel is pointing us to. We've got, you know, other great keys of Isaiah 2, and he's pointing us to the city of Jerusalem and Mount Zion, and from here the word of the Lord's going to go forth, and he's telling us parts about this kingdom. Daniel's giving us the most information concerning the timing of this kingdom. Now we know it's going to happen in the days of this Roman Empire. And to further trouble him, verse 45 even, what you see is the establishment of this kingdom, because you saw a stone cut out of the mountains, and it was cut out without hands. In other words, this was not done by human invention or human thought or human will. This was by the power and the hand of God. And this stone was going to break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. The great God hath made known to thee what shall come to pass hereafter. And again, we come back full circle to the certainty of these things that are going to happen. Your kingdoms are going to come and go. God's kingdom will be forever. And so that's only a portion, I suppose, of what we could dig into there. But maybe, Chip, you've got some other insights you'd like to hit on.
Well, you might remember that Galatians 4, we mm-hmm. read that in the fullness of time, you know, there was a timetable that God's working on that Nebuchadnezzar doesn't see, you know, that we may not understand from time to time. But he is building up to a big crescendo, which is the indestructible kingdom. And each of these kingdoms that are mentioned here are going to have a contribution to the fullness of time. You know that the great system of law that came forth out of the Medo-Persian period of time. There was the language that came through the next empire. There was the great period of peace, you might say, that came through the Roman Empire. And even interestingly, and it's probably reading too much into it, but notice the feet. There was the roads that were made. You know, travel was much easier. And so, you know, Jesus would have opportunity to move around much easier. And just so many things that are amazing to see is God's plan. His thoughts are not our thoughts. And his so far superior to us. And so what he's doing is he is preparing for this big crescendo. Beautiful.
I guess I was thinking there, even as you were reminding us of those things, the idea of how Habakkuk and others struggled with this idea. How do you use the Babylonians to bring about justice? And yes, they were going to be used as to bring about the captivity of God's people, but they too were going to have justice. They were going to have to pay for their sins and their iniquities. God would judge them, and he would bring them down. But the interesting thing there, that these human and oftentimes wicked empires nevertheless would be used by God to accomplish his will and his purpose. And as you pointed out, each of those kingdoms contributed in a way to the spread and the benefit of the great kingdom of God. Amen. And, you know, I have no doubt that history is going to record, in some senses, even the American Empire, if you will, for whatever its future may be, that if a history was written of this sort, if nothing else, it provided opportunities for the gospel to be spread forth into the world with its wealth and its opportunities. And hopefully history will, even if secular history doesn't, that we would be able to look back and say, here were people that used the opportunities that they had, that used what they could out of that empire to be for the spread of the gospel. Well, these empires were used, and they contributed, and they benefited even to the benefit of the coming of the kingdom of God. Great lessons there again. And so Daniel has made known, this is what you dreamed, this is ultimately what it means. And it's one of those mixed messages. We're going to see that again in Daniel 4. Daniel hesitates. I don't know how to tell you this concerning the interpretation of this dream. This isn't a dream that likely Nebuchadnezzar wants to hear, because it does predict eventually the downfall of him and his kingdom. It's going to come to pass in that reality. But what I can appreciate about Nebuchadnezzar is the praise that he's going to give unto Daniel and unto God. That even in the spite of the message that was revealed, and maybe at times it's unflattering nature, nevertheless, he's thankful to know what has been revealed. And so let's look in verse 46 through 49, and we'll see the reaction of Nebuchadnezzar.
Then the king, Nebuchadnezzar, fell upon his face and worshipped Daniel, and commanded that they should offer an oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, "Of a truth, it is that your God is a God of gods, and a Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret." Then the king made Daniel a great man, and gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel requested of the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king.
All right. And so what gets to happen here? Daniel gains notoriety. He gains power within the empire that's going to allow him to be in situations to further promote God and to make God known among the nations. That Nebuchadnezzar is going to come to know the power and the wisdom of God. You also have here that recognition there in verse 47. Your God is a God of gods. Not fully come yet to the conclusion that God is God, but that recognition, he's greater than any God I know, because nobody else could tell me what this meant except your God. And so at least is coming to a knowledge here. There's something special about Daniel and his God. We're not told a lot. Might back up to verse 46. He worships Daniel, offers oblations unto him. I can't imagine Daniel, from what we know of him, that he would willingly accept any type of undue worship or praise. This may be something that the king has instructed that Daniel had no control or power over. But I can't imagine Daniel allowing that. But because we've already seen earlier in this dream, don't thank me for this. Thank God. But he is going to use the opportunities before him, because now he's made this great man even in the king's gate, and he's going to set up his friends. Again, I see the wisdom of Nebuchadnezzar. That's a wise man. I want Daniel near me. And so put him in a position of power. I see the wisdom of Daniel. Surround yourself with good people. I want Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They also ought to be in good powers. Well, I think we're going to see there why ultimately in chapter 6, the people of the land, the wise men of the land, are going to be searching for the downfall of Daniel. How would you like to be a native, as it were, and here's this foreigner that's being promoted over you, and so quickly? Mm-hmm. And again, probably even here as a young man in chapter 2. And so there's certainly more in the chapter, some great lessons, some great wisdom we learn from Daniel as we go through there, and more important, that history that we're going to see unfold. And that was one thing I think that probably influenced me the most as a younger person, is looking at these Old Testament prophecies and then getting to see both in biblical history and in secular history that things would come to pass just as God said that they would. And that's what I love about Daniel chapter 2. Yes, that dream's going to be fulfilled just as it was foretold. And ultimately, what's the greatest thing? Verse 44 and verse 45, this eternal kingdom that's going to be set up.
Yes, yeah, so absolutely, as we have the opportunity to look at him, we might remember, despise not thy youth, mm-hmm. but be thou an example. And he certainly was an example, and we continue to preach him today. It was probably Richard or one of the other fabulous preachers that we have around here that mentioned that he would not bend or bow.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we'll see that as the book unfolds in front of us. But, you know, this is an opportunity to stand, you know, throw me to the lions, whatever it is that you mm-hmm. think you need to do. But I'm going to stick with God regardless. So a great example and, you know, dare to be a Daniel.
That's right. That's right. Wonderful. Well, with that, we find ourselves about out of time. Mm-hmm. Once again, thank you for joining us. And I do want to remind you that all of these lessons of this Old Testament study are being archived, and they are finally getting in place. And so if you want to visit that on-demand section, look for those Old Testament studies. And I think we have archived already Genesis to about Psalm 120 or so, right through there, and we'll be adding more there shortly. And so if you've missed some things, now you've got opportunity to go back. Our hope is to be able to host those there for years to come, so that if you want to use these studies, you can go back and make use of them. And I know I've enjoyed and benefited from the study, and hope that you have as well. We sign off, but hope that you have a great day, and keep on listening right here on the Gospel Radio Network.
Listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.